That's like five players in our league, right? That win a lot, score a lot, and play a lot. So, right, let's look at all the ways we can bring value. And the reality is, at the end of the day, people just want to feel part of something. And the role in which it is can look a little different, but it's valued.
Welcome to the Coach's Playbook Podcast. I'm your host, Wyatt Faust, current Division I women's basketball assistant coach and recruiting coordinator at Murray State University. All right, we're kicking off week one with our first tip-off segment. In this part of the show, we're going to cover different ideas, thoughts, and topics that I think are pretty unique and valuable that sometimes can get overlooked or we don't think about on the day-to-day. The opening tip-off, I thought this was a great time of year to go ahead and start looking at some wrinkles and things that we can add to our playbook. And these are just some ideas that I've either done or have talked to coaches that have had a lot of success doing that can help steal them possessions or even help them win some games. Later in today's episode, we'll be getting into some special situations, so this is a great segue for jumping right into the tip-off. I think no matter what level you're at, you have to have some beaters. And what I mean by beaters are certain coverage beaters, okay? So whether that's you got a team that you know you've got a great post player and they're going to be doubling the post a lot, you need to have some double beaters. If you have a team that traps a lot of ball screens or they hedge a lot of ball screens in your conference or your league, you need to have some coverage beaters no matter what ball screen coverage you might see. And so I think as a coach, it's our job to make sure our teams are prepared for everything they're going to see. And by making sure we have some of these in our playbook or as part of our offensive arsenal, we're going to make sure our teams are set up to have the most success possible no matter what the other team might throw out at us. So if you're playing a team that switches a lot, or maybe they hard hedge, or maybe they get super aggressive chasing shooters around over screens and different actions, you know that you're going to need some slips into what you do, okay? And instead of having a entirely different play to get to some of those slips that you like, you can just audible two slips out of those plays. So anytime that you would love for your player to naturally make those reads, and as coaches, we hope that our players do get there where they naturally make those reads. With slips and backdoors, the windows on those things can open and close pretty quickly. The passer's ready for that, and the cutter's ready for that. It just kind of helps them out. So one thing that I've always done, no matter what our playbook looks like, if I wanted, if we had a horn set and I wanted a slip out of the horn set instead of just a regular screen, for example, let's say we call the play five. So if we want the slip, we might say five sauce. I just chose a word that started with the letter S that our players would know. You probably don't want to yell slip, assuming there's a good chance the other team knows what you're going to be looking for if you're over there yelling that. And so, it's just a really easy audible out of what we're already doing. And we have those out of multiple plays. So whether that's out of ball screens, someone's chasing over flare screens, like I mentioned earlier, and you just want your player to slip out of that. You can choose whatever verbiage you want for that. It's a really good idea to have some of those built in. And again, that's a way that, you can add, three, four, five, six different slip options that you really like without having to add a whole bunch of plays to the playbook. The second thing I would strongly consider is adding like specials to your playbook. And again, these are going to be things that they're not their own play. And so we're just trying to find ways to get into some things we like or to make teams pay for certain things within what we already do, within the plays our players are already super comfortable and familiar with. Some plays in your playbook are going to have just a naturally, really good built-in backdoor opportunity, whether that's a dribble out situation, maybe an elbow entry situation, where there's some handoff stuff. Somewhere in your playbook, there's probably a great chance that there's an opportunity for that. Well, that's a great time to run a backdoor rather than feeling like you need to go add a couple backdoor plays into the playbook. So if you're, if your dribble at play, which is normally a weave that you want to turn into the backdoor, horns down special. Maybe it's a sideline out of bounds play and you're seeing that the guy on ball, you want your players to read where the on ball guy is. And if they're sagged super far off, instead of up on the ball where you hope they are and you're bringing them off screens, maybe you just want to pop your inbounder, or maybe you want to get a quick throw right back to them for a catch and shoot. Maybe they've got range, whatever the case may be, especially if you're kind of deeper down the sideline. whatever your sideline play is, it can be ear special. And then they know, instead of kind of going through the full motion, we're just going to kind of hit that counter and audible to that. So I think all of those specials are great ways to steal actions and to steal things that you like without having to add a whole bunch of new plays to what you're already doing. Next thing to consider, and I think this is a big one, end of game situations, like it or not, as coaches, a lot of times that's where we're remembered. You may be an underdog that's fighting tooth and nail and you're in a game and, you know, end of game happens and you don't win. You know, no one's going to talk about the fact that you shouldn't even have been in the game. They're going to talk about what special situation or what late game thing happened. And that's kind of what we're judged by at times. And I also think it's super important, not just for the perspective, but also the preparation. You know, in the moments that the game is the tightest, when it is on the line, that's where that, you know, the confidence of preparation really kicks in. You love that quote that says, you know, we don't rise to the occasion, we sink to the level of our training. If you've gone over those situations, they've been in those situations, and they can find some comfortable things in familiar spots, I just think you're doing your team such a favor. And so end a game and you've got a lead late, you know the other team is going to be all out trying to deny and doing everything they can to try to get a steal or 5 second count. One thing that has been extremely valuable over the years for me is using the go long play. And I mean, this is not some crazy, cool, unique idea I've thought of, but you know, one thing that I thought we did a good job with, and the reason I think it's so important, is one, a lot of times it's a dagger play. If it's a 2-4-5 point game and they're all out and you can get behind them and get an easy one, it shortens the amount of time they have left, but it's also kind of a backbreaker to the other team. But, you know, I think you've got to be smart about when you do it. Okay. First of all, if there's a timeout situation and, you know, if they were just pressing and you couldn't get in and you take a timeout, there's a really good chance the other coach is going to have their team prepared for you to go long, especially if you've been shown and known to do it. So that's not always the best time to do it. Now, if there's a timeout late in the game and the other team has an offensive possession and then you're about to get pressed, or after a free throw, or those kind of situations, I think this is really fantastic. I don't think you need a brand new alignment or press break to go long. I think you can find a way out of whatever your press break alignment is to get an easy one and get behind the defense. But again, kind of in that same thought and vein of thought of the special situations, you know, if you're just out there yelling, Tom Brady, Tom Brady, they might figure it out. I mean, if you're kind of, you know, if you think you're really sneaky and you're really getting one over on the defense and winking and hollering at your play, you're probably going to tip off the other coach, and the other players are probably a little bit wise to it too. So I think something as simple as having, you know, maybe you pick a position on the floor, maybe it's your center. So no matter what center's in the game, and you say, hey, Susie, come on, let's go, Susie. You got to help go get it. Come on, Susie. And you call their name a couple times over and over and over. And, you know, that kind of cues your team. Again, you've prepared for this. You've talked about this. Hey, guys, listen, the only way I'm going to be calling our center's name at the end of the game a couple times is for us to run our go long play. And it's very natural because you're going to be yelling and talking to your players through the whole game. So that doesn't really tip anybody off about what's going on, but it just makes sure everybody's on the same page. And I'm doing go long stuff. Unless your post player is really, really athletic, don't love going long to them. Most people are switching guard to guard late in the game like that when you're just trying to get it in. I think having the guard closest to the baseline, up screening, diagonal screening, whatever, for the other guard that's above them, up around the three-point line, wherever you have them, having them go up and then fly out, I think that's the safest, best path, and you've got a speedier guy getting to run that down for a layup. But that's something we practice, we work on consistently throughout the year, because those are late game things. And like I said, it's a dagger deal, and you really want to have something like that in your playbook. All right, the last one here, this is going to be for high school coaches, because in college, the clock stops at the end of games when a ball goes through the net. So this doesn't really work, but won a lot of games, made a lot of people mad on the other sideline by doing this. But, you know, realize late in the game, when the other team scores, the clock is still running. And so when I was a high school coach, if we had a 4-point lead with 15 seconds to go and we're on defense, I knew the game was over, because all we really have to do is keep the ball in front of us for 5 seconds or so. And then as soon as the ball goes through the net, we are going to be doing what we call dummy. Now, in retrospect, and as I look back, probably could have had a better name for it, but, you know, that was is what it is. And so we just called it dummy. So our players knew unequivocally in those situations, we were going to have one guy start to go out of bounds, and then they were all going to yell at each other. So they'd take a few steps towards out of bounds like they're going to take it out. Then everybody be yelling at each other, and they'd be like, not you. No, she's supposed to take it out. And then the other girl would start heading there on a light jog. And the amount of time it takes off the clock while you're sitting there, you can't figure it out. You're looking unorganized, but you know you're bleeding the game out. And so by the time they actually pick the ball up, as long as there's 4 seconds or less on the clock, you never even have to throw it in. So the game is truly over. The one thing to be careful with that, and we would, you know, we'd talk about, and we'd practice, is not very often, but occasionally you might get a ref who is on it and starts the count. You know, they're like, as soon as you're even getting the sideline, or they'll set the ball down, they'll start the count on you. If you've got a timeout in your pocket, don't worry about it. I'd ride it out until the last second, then I would take my timeout. If I did not have a timeout, you know, that's something we make sure we talk about getting it in. But at that point, you're talking, if they start quick counting you, there's probably 2-3 seconds left. That's one of those deals. You just throw it really high, really far on the other end of the court, and the game's over anyway. So just some little things to think about as you get into what'll be a long, hopefully healthy and enjoyable season for everybody, and looking forward to cruising on through the best of our podcast. All right, now let's jump into what you guys really came here for. Our guest this week in 9 seasons holds the overall career record of 214-85. She was 104-3 at the Division II level, with an undefeated season capped off by a national championship before heading on to accepting a Division I job in the MAC conference. In the MAC, she went on to set a conference record for wins in a season while making it to the Fab Four of the WNIT. She was the first coach in Michigan State history to make the NCAA tournament in her first year and finished 16th in the country in the AP polls. Our guest today, none other than head coach of the Michigan State Spartans, Coach Robin Frelick. Coach Frelick, welcome to the Coach's Playbook Podcast. Appreciate you coming on.
Thanks for having me.
No, for sure. When I decided to kind of reboot this thing and do it right, you were without a doubt one of the first people I wanted to reach out to, a championship coach, obviously, and to anybody that really knows you, a Hall of Fame person. And, you know, something I have told a few other people about you is, you know, to hear your assistant coaches talk about you in a good way, consistently all the time. I mean, that it just speaks volumes. I mean, how you treat everybody in your circle, anywhere around you, in the periphery. I mean, there's just not a lot of people who stand for what everybody wants to believe that Division I college athletics stands for.
Oh, I appreciate that, Wyatt. That's really kind.
Before we jump into the thick of the hoops talk, I want to make sure everybody knows you a little bit. Coming up as a 3-sport high school athlete, standout high school basketball player in Michigan and college player at Davidson. Was there always a part of you that wanted to come back home? Because there is a saying, you can't go home again. Any of that scare you about taking over at Michigan State?
You know, it was one of those things, I don't think I thought a lot about it. I loved growing up here. I loved where I grew up. I think I had a really good just experience in so many ways. And growing up in a college town, I think there's a real value to that. But the reality is, I think I've always just really liked where I've been. And I don't mean that in a cliche way. I think that every community we've been part of, we've loved and we've felt really invested in. I just feel really fortunate. It's been a blessing. Very rarely in coaching do you get to do what you love with all the people you love around you. That doesn't happen a lot. So that's the part I'm most grateful for.
Yeah, well, that's awesome. And, you've reciprocated the love for the community and the wins for the programs where you've been. And, you know, speaking of at Ashland, you are 104-3. It's not a typo. That's a real number. That 972 career win percentage is the highest all time in NCAA history with a minimum of 100 games. You know, in 16-17, you guys go undefeated, go on to win the national championship. You've won a MAC championship, already made, you know, big time splashes and waves and set some records at Michigan State in just year one. Was there a common denominator amongst those teams that reached those heights and peaked at the right time, which is a big part of it too? You know, we could probably do a whole episode on just this, but you know, I think that's something everybody would love to hear about, what drove those successful teams to get where they were.
Well, I think you nailed it in talking about team. I think the overlap of all of those groups was they played like a team, they acted like a team, they competed like a team, they practiced like a team. And the reality is we have such a long season and with the summer. And so you've got to have a group that wants to be together. You've got to have a group that in March still really feels passionate about the mission. So that was the biggest overlap. I think our staff does a really good job of focusing on what to get better at today and what to get better at tomorrow and just keeping it small. You know, one of my favorite quotes is zoom in, right? Zoom in for process, zoom out for progress, right? And I think like if you can stay zoomed in on process and then over the course of a season, right, you can zoom out a little bit on the progress of the group. So I think that's it. I think as a staff, we try to never get ahead of ourselves. I mean, even when I was a Division II head coach and we were preseason number one in the country, you know, we didn't talk about winning a national championship. We talked about being champions, right? How do we show up today like a champion? Like, what does championship behavior look like every day, everywhere, right? In the classroom, in the community, at practice. So I think that's the overlap that I've seen with those groups. But my favorite thing is those groups, the best teams I've coached, I know when you go against us, you have to beat a team. You know, it's not a good player or a good play, but you're going to have to go up against a team.
I think everybody in the world, you know, would love to hear a little bit about, you know, what I think a big part, you know, everybody's going to have a leading score. There's just going to be one. Yeah. You're going to have one or two. You know, that's part of it. So how do you get the guys who aren't going to lead you in scoring, guys number 6, 7, 8, how do you get them to buy into roles? Because that's, you know, that's a big part of the secret sauce, is making sure, you know, everybody feels that appreciation, feels, you know, that they are a star in their role and that mm-hmm. role is important. I've heard you talk about the difference in being a sixth man and what that means and some different things. But, you know, I think that's something that we can lose sight of and struggle with at times. It's hard to get the, you know, leading score, you know, to buy in it, but sometimes it is, you know. But what can you do to actively make sure that, especially in a current landscape where there's more, you know, notoriety, the women's game is growing, how can you make sure your teams keep team above self when the entire world is all about self?
Well, one of our favorite quotes is star in the role you have and work towards the one you want. I think sometimes when we talk about roles, it can feel like limiting, right? And so we always, it's like, it's just where you are right now, like star in the role you have and keep working towards the one you want. But, you know, I think as a team, we talk a lot about shot quality, right? We talk a lot about how do we hunt the best shot for the group. And the reality is, the better players have more good shots, right? That some of the shots they take are just better shots for our team. And the reality is too that nobody wins alone. And so we put a big emphasis on all the little things that go into it. Like, what does that investment look like? Because the reality is, if you were to ask the group, what do they want? Well, you know, I share this with our team every year. You know, if you want to win, you want to score a lot, and you want to play a lot, that's like 5 players in our league, right? That win a lot, score a lot, and play a lot. Maybe 5. That do have all 3 of those. So that's very uncommon out of 100+ players in a league, right? So, right, let's look at all the ways we can bring value, right? Let's look at all the ways. So we emphasize that a lot in film. We emphasize that a lot in our core value share circles. And the reality is, like, at the end of the day, people just want to feel part of something. And the role in which it is can look a little different, but it's valued. And we also don't want people to be okay with just being a role player, right? As I shared, like, hey, this is where we are. This is what we need out of you right now. But this is where you can get. So let's keep working.
Yeah, I think that's awesome to get them focused but not limiting and keep them excited about that. That's good stuff. Making the jump from Division II Ashland to high mid-major MAC basketball at Bowling Green, I mean, that had to be a leap of faith. It would have been, I think, really easy and super comfortable to ride out the next 10 years, lose about 4 more games over 10 years, just go on and really have you know, just an awesome career and do that thing. You know, was there ever any part of you that during your first year at Bowling Green, I mean, you guys lose 3 games in 3 years, year one at Bowling Green, 21 losses. Was there ever a part of you that questioned going? Was there a part of you that questioned what you were doing or the philosophy or the basketball side of it? You know, how do people get through those? Everybody goes through those transition periods if you coach long enough. What was your mindset like that, and what got you from year one to what you went on to do there?
Yeah, well, I do laugh that I do think sometimes I should have retired 3 years as a head coach at Ashland, retired, wrote a book, pretended like there were secrets, which there really aren't, but I could have pretended for a little while. But the jump to Bowling Green was a really good challenge. I think that's at the point of my career, I was ready for a new challenge, and a new challenge we found for sure. Yeah, there were definitely points where I felt like I had no idea what I was doing. I felt like I'd never coached before, you know, and the reality is it made us and our staff way better coaches. Because when your margin for the game is super small, everything changes, right? Every baseline out of bounds coverage, like the way you feel about it changes. Like every possession has so much more value because we realize the difference between winning and losing was so small, and we had such small room for error. And we just kept working. You know, one thing I did that year, I had a Word document sheet where I wrote down all the victories, and they weren't necessarily happening on the court, but it might be as simple as like we started to have great practices, or kids who had never consistently ever been shooting or working on their game outside of practice were now in the gym working on their game, right? There was all these like small victories that as a staff we could see happening. And so that helped me. I think it was more for me personally to know. One of my favorite quotes is, it's a C.S. Lewis quote, and it's, day to day, nothing seems to change, but pretty soon everything's different. And even in that first year and in that second year, we knew we were getting a lot better. Like we felt like we were really getting a lot better. There was going to be a breakthrough, but we had to make sure we were paying attention to those victories, and we shared them with the team, because the reality is you got to keep them going and keep believing and keep working. So that learned a lot, very hard. I think we had to change a lot of things we did, because at Ashland we could dominate possessions and dominate the margin of the game, and at Bowling Green when we got there we couldn't do that. So definitely made us better coaches, and it made us pay more attention to all of the small things and really keep our team motivated.
Yeah, that's super valuable. I think, like you said, we are such, you know, scoreboard people, and because that's how we are judged. I think it was Rick Majerus said, you are your record, and you can throw out all the other stuff because, I mean, you know, you are your record, like it or not. And so I think it's easy to just get down on yourself. You know, I think like chipping away at that and then reminding yourself, but sharing with your team too, you know, those victories and keeping them motivated. I think that's, you know, really good stuff. Let's listen to this clip from Media Day.
Yeah, I think number one thing I learned from Coach Freilich was just relationships come first. As soon as she got to campus, it was, you know, her getting to know us as people, as human beings, and then the basketball came next. And I think we definitely, our season went the way it did just because of the trust and the relationships we built with her and her staff, for sure.
I think that's really powerful stuff. Whenever I hear players in media interviews and you hear them echoing sentiments from your program, things that, you know, pillars of what you do and things like that, that's how you know it's the point's getting home and they're receiving the message and you're not just sending a message. So what did it mean for you for the first thing your player says at Media Day to talk about how, you know, you going in and building relationships with them was the most important thing to them?
Well, I think as a coach that really resonates that they are experiencing that, because I know that's something as a staff that we really value. I just think, as I shared, we're together all the time. So for me, I don't know any other way, right? I always say we're not just doing basketball together, we're doing life together. And the reality is our job as a coach is basketball, and it's a lot of things, but it's understanding them. All kids are different, all kids learn different, all kids are wired different. And so we've got to have an understanding of that when teaching them and when coaching them. So I love that. One of the things I loved last year too was we beat Michigan at home, and afterwards they did an interview also with Julia at center court. And I remember them asking her, like, what is it? What do you feel like it is about your team? And she shared, well, togetherness is our superpower. And I remember, I didn't know she said it. I saw it later on like social media, or, you know, there was a recap. And I just, like, it just, you know, those warmed me. Like, I'm like, oh my gosh. Like, we talk about that, we play like that, but they feel that. right? And they're proud of that. So it's always a work in progress. You know, we're always trying to make sure we're sharing the things that really matter and making sure they matter to them. Because it's one thing if it matters to us. It's a whole nother thing if it matters to them. When you hear those things, you feel like, all right, we're moving in the same direction.
Well, with being successful at that clearly and that driving successful results, leading young people today is, I think, a little bit different. And I don't think everybody wants to embrace that. I don't think they want to accept that. But, I mean, it's too bad. I think my least favorite words are kids these days. That's something that I think we're at an interesting, crossroads and time and point in coaching and teaching, but also, raising children in the future. Yeah. Because the fact is, this is who they are. They're a product of their raising and their environment. And, they're growing up with pressures that we never had and we never understood. And so it's easy to want to just do what you've always done and coach the way you've always coached and things like that. But what is it about leadership style? How have you attacked learning about young people today and how to reach them and how to meet them where they are and start from there?
Well, I think an important part of that is asking them questions. I think as simple as sometimes when I'm watching film with a player, before I even dig into film, I'll say, well, what did you think of the game? And then all of a sudden I'm like, oh my gosh, their tracking and my tracking are so totally different of what I think happened or what they thought happened. And so I just think you have to be a great question asker. And you have to ask questions in a way of curiosity to really help. I think the second thing is, and I love what you said, I also think kids these days are as creative and funny and seeking real connection as ever. I've coached at every level, Division II, mid-major, Power 5. And from my experience, what I've learned is the things that matter always matter. What kids need and want has not changed based on the level I've coached. In fact, at the highest level, I think they need it the most because they've had the most limelight, pressure, scrutiny throughout their life. So I think you got to be a great question asker. I think you have to at times meet them where they're at. And I think it's your job as a teacher to figure out how they learn instead of the first answer being frustration. Because from my experience, most people don't want to get things wrong. So it's our job to figure out what's the disconnection and how do we make it click. And when they know you care, their willingness to try changes.
Yeah, for sure. And I love what you said about, questioning with intent to listen. I coaches, we can get good about asking a question to set them up, to bring the hammer to them. And it's so valuable to understand where their head's at. But when they know that you're asking those questions and talking them in a way that you want to talk through things with them, that's one of those things that can really build those genuine bonds. And it's this coach cares what I think. I mean, because they've probably somewhere along the way had a coach that just really didn't care much about them or what they thought. And so I think there's a lot of value in that. And the older I get, the less I know about basketball. And
for sure,
when I was a 24-year-old head coach, I mean, I was John Wooden. You couldn't tell me anything. And I had it figured out. And, along the way, I've figured out, I've spent less and less time, trying to learn 100 new sets and pick and roll coverages and spent a lot more time trying to understand people, trying to understand the young people we deal with and their pressures and their point of view and things like that. And just how to reach them. If you can reach them, you can coach them. And you hear more and more people, I do think, are starting to understand that. But I think these dialogues and things are important conversation pieces to keep having to make sure we get there for these young people. So I think all that's awesome. I do want to talk offense. And this is the Coach's Playbook Podcast. We are trying to, dig in to find the people who are at the top of the field and what they do. And I think offense has always been a super strong suit, especially in reference to pace and flow. That's something that everybody's playing fast in October. Everybody wants to play fast. And then in March, there's a lot of walking it up and set running and things like that. So you guys scored over 82 points per game. That was good for sixth in the country. By chance, do you know who finished fifth?
Murray State?
The Racers. Racers came like racing it. Right there in fifth.
You should be answering this question then.
Yeah, right. Yeah, well, your guys' point per possession and efficiency was a little bit better. So we'll let you have at it. But and of course, that was a school record what you guys did. So what makes your past teams, your current team, so efficient offensively? I mean, at one point, you can be a volume scoring team, but you guys are at 1 point per possession. And that's the golden standard. You're one of the top three teams in the country in points per possession and playing that fast, that can get really, really hard. So what is it about what you do that makes you fast yet efficient?
We do it all the time. So I think a big part of it is it's how we practice all the time. So I think anything you do all the time, you get habits with, you get comfortable, you get a real feel for what you're looking for. You know, I think the best teams, they're just really good at the things that happen all the time, right? Like when there's conversion, what do you do when the ball's passed here? What do you do on a skip pass? Like, so I think a big part of it, it's how we play all the time. There's a piece of it that is incredibly simple. I'm not saying it's easy, because there's a lot of decision making involved and there's a lot of like collective movement. And we do let a lot of people dribble and make decisions, which, you know, other teams I think probably keep it more to one or two players doing that. We have five people that we allow to pass, catch, and shoot. So I think those are parts of it. I think the other part is we are like incredibly diligent about shot quality. Our kids know what a good shot is, and we don't have them play hesitant because of it. And it's not like they're reprimanded. It's just more like get a better shot. So we talk about that as like a consistent feedback in practice. That's a consistent feedback when we watch film. And then all of a sudden you get everybody moving together with that, right? All of a sudden as a team, you're hunting for shot quality. So I think it's a combination of shot quality. It's what we do all the time. I mean, if you were to come watch practice, there's just segments of our practice that are all we're working on is our missed shot, made shot, missed shot, made shot, missed shot, made shot. And it gets to the point where there isn't as much thinking involved as there is just automatic habits. And then if you get a group that really believes in playing together and gets excited, right? It's like making the extra pass is as exciting as hitting the three. Efficiency happens.
Coaching shot selection, you know, I think the best teams and the teams that are the hardest to deal with, when their best players are going to take the most shots in the spots they want to take them from, they're going to have a good night more than they're not. On the flip side, you really enjoy playing the teams that you can convince their fourth and fifth best guy to take their second best shot. And so I think finding creative ways, you know, you talk about giving that feedback instantly. So, you know, in practice, girl takes a shot that you know is not a good shot for her. I mean, you're right there on the spot. Hey, not a good shot for you.
Or is that something you make shot. Get a better shot for the team. Get a better shot.
So, like, the accountability piece with that, I think holding people accountable to your standards, whether it is the pace, whether it is shot selection, whether it is roles, whatever it may be, or just accountability to your like team standards and attitude and all those things that aren't comfortable, I guess. What's that accountability piece look like? In the age of the transfer portal, I think people are scared to coach their best players. I think they're scared to hold them accountable to much of anything. How do you do that? How do you just really instill that accountability in the right way where it's there, where you're setting them up for success in life after this? Because letting them slide because their talent is setting them up for some major failures when it's going to matter more after this. Mm-hmm.
Well, one of the things our staff talks about is like, we're never going to coach scared of the portal. I think actually players want discipline. Players want a plan. Players want to be pushed. Players want to be challenged. Good players, right? Those are things they actually are desperately seeking. So we're never going to coach scared of that. It's just a reality of our world. I think no matter how you coach kids, some kids will stay and some kids will leave. So we've made a real commitment to we're going to coach them. We always say, tell the truth in love. Like, we're going to love them and we're going to coach them hard. And, you know, best players want to be coached hard. Best players want to be told the truth and best players want to get better. So we coach with that mentality. I also think your team knows, right? Like, they know who the best scorers are. They know who the best players are. And if you've got a team that's really invested in being successful, like, they want to get them the ball. Right? They want to get them the ball in the right spots for our team to be successful. So we talk a lot about team cognition too. Like, I'll ask our team, like, why would we run this? You know, okay, we put this action in. Why would we run this? Okay, well, it's our two best players in the middle of the court, our two best scorers in the middle of the court, right? So like, we talk them through, why would this be effective for us, right? This gets our best shooter a look we want from three early in the game. So like, right, as it's instead of it being like you're our best scorer, it's like as we're talking through why are we doing this, why would we put this in, why is this effective for us, right? They're learning too. Oh yeah, that makes sense. Yeah, of course we're gonna get them the ball right here.
Yeah, no, that's awesome. I think there's no tricks. You know, it's we tell our kids like, listen, I want you to know everything I know. I'm not trying to be the smartest guy in the
room. No secrets.
It's a lot better that you know it than I do. So I think that's pretty cool. When you guys were at Bowling Green, I had the great misfortune to get to coach against you a couple times. And one of the things that, you know, made it just miserable to play against you was it felt like we were getting pressed while you were on offense. You know, I mean, you just couldn't breathe. You couldn't, you know, you just never had even a second to just relax or settle in or get to your help side or get to much of anything because of what you guys were doing. You know, your transition off of a miss flowed really, really well into what you guys did in the half court. Mm-hmm. You know, and I mean, is that something that like, you know, you're actively like consistently working on? Because, you know, a missed transition, you're going to have some organization, but, you know, the ball can get in 100 different spots, a lot of different guys' hands. Is that something that, you know, you guys consistently work towards and work through is that transitioning from transition to flow off?
Yeah, well, you did ruin our senior night, so you had a good game plan, coach. Yeah, same thing. So our missed shot break is we teach it. Right. And then we're really consistent with it. And they understand the sequence of this is what we're looking for first. This is what we're looking for second. This is what we're looking for third. And then off of that, all of our early goals in offense are get the ball to paint. Right. That can be an early post touch. That can be a point guard hunting the paint. You know, if we get it to the paint. Right. And we don't score off that immediately. All right. How do we want defense to be? We want it to sink and we want it to be in rotation and we want it to be in that early. So right now, how do we get into a skip, right? How do we get into a long closeout? And everything that we do from our missed shot break flows directly into our offense, regardless of who brings the ball up or regardless of which way the ball gets brought up. It all seamlessly gets right back into how we play. So I think if you really want to play with pace, you can't reset, right? You can't, hey, if we get this, but we don't get it, reset. So we work a lot on the seamlessness of it. There's an interchangeability to our spaces, which helps with it, so people don't feel like they have to get back to a spot. And then we really teach the sequencing of what we're looking for, and we make it really clear with our players. This is what good early offense creates, and this is the looks you get. So let's hunt that every time. And if we don't get it, it's okay. Let's just make sure we get the defense in early rotation.
Okay, when you're playing fast, so one thing, you know, after makes, what was really difficult is you guys got the ball up the floor extremely quick, and you had a handful of really quick hit options, and they all looked the same. They were disguised really well, and they're still working in the conference tournament because you did a great job of making the defense wrong. And then even if one of those quick hits didn't, you had some quick hit ducking stuff, some dribble handoff, baseline rip stuff, and, you know, you had a nice handful of those actions. And so as you're planning for the season, is that something off of make that you guys sit around and you're like, hey, here's a few of the things with our personnel we really like. How can we disguise it? Do we need to disguise it? You know, what does that like plan and prep piece look like for what you're going to do after makes?
Yeah, off makes. I mean, we have a number of different cycles. We will know going into a game, all right, off makes, we're going to be in this cycle to start. And maybe we'll change it after the first media timeout. Or we know we're going to be in this series. So it gives it all of it's seamless, though. We're never changing our positioning by it, so it all is still the same flow as our miss shot. It's just off made shot, we know we can get into some of these trigger actions. So we have like a different series for that. Some of it will be based on who we're playing, some of it's based on maybe this has just been working really well. And then our kids understand, same thing, we always call them just actions. They're not plays, they're just actions. And if we score off them, great, but if not, it's no big deal. We're just moving the defense early into our offense, right? So same idea of like, it might just create some initial help in rotation, and now we're playing out of our offense. So there's a plan to it. We definitely change it. That's something we've adjusted year to year based on our personnel, based on level, based on maybe who needs the ball early on made shots. But I think you can simplify it, because for me, if we have too much stuff, I get confused. I'm like, you know, all of a sudden you're like, my brain's get just too full of clutter. But if you can simplify, like, all right, these are our ball screen cycles. These are our screening cycles against them. Maybe our screening cycles are going to be more effective. This is what we're starting in every made shot, right? And then maybe at the first media timeout, we're going to change it to this.
I think that's awesome. One thing with transitioning, you know, trying to play faster, which is what we've done, we get caught up in you know, we've got a handful of things that we really like in our early offense, but, you know, we may, you know, you go two possessions and you want to get into something else, so you call it, and then a couple possessions later you try to call it, and inevitably, you know, your players are looking back, you know, for that call. You know, okay, well, we in this, you know, and that yeah. stuff slows you down a little bit. So I really like that idea of, hey, we know we're in it. And to the media, if it's killing it, we'll keep rolling, you know, and then at a set point when you get a chance, okay, now we can go in and you don't have to, you know, there's no confusion about what we're going to be in, things like that. I think that's awesome.
And you can know dead balls, maybe off a free throw, like there's opportunities to do something else, but you have to practice that way. You know, I was at a coaching clinic this summer, and one of the best things I've heard ever was Ben McCollum, who was at Northwest Missouri State, is a really, really good D2 coach. He just took the job at Drake, and he said, you know, the way he teaches is during the game, it goes from coach versus coach to teacher versus teacher, right? So during the game, it's like, all right, he makes it a teacher versus teacher game. Like, who's the better teacher? Whose kids really understand what to do and how to play, as opposed to the coach imposing right on every part of the game. And that really resonated with me. Like, right, you've got to become where it's teacher versus teacher, right? Where your kids are seeing things and being able to make decisions during the game.
Yeah, that's really cool. I haven't heard it put that way. I like that. I think I'm going to steal that. Okay, Coach, when you guys are hitting conference time or postseason, are you guys adding plays, adding things? And if so, are those going to be entirely new sets, entirely new actions? Or are you trying to, you know, build on the things you already do, maybe counters to what, you know, the way teams have guarded you in the non-con or how they guard you first time around? You know, what does that developing playbook look like for you guys?
Yeah, I think in postseason, we look more at counters and wrinkles. From my experience, if you try to put in a bunch of new stuff, they literally do nothing right. And I think it also makes them feel like what they've done all year to get to the position they're in didn't work, right? Whereas opposed to, hey, we're here because of what we've done and we've got to keep doing that well. And the reality is, you know, I watched a lot of the top 10 teams in the country this summer, and it's like, it's not crazy what they're doing. It's just, they have really good players and it's simple and it's hard to guard because it is simple. So, but wrinkles and counters I do think are helpful. I absolutely think you can steal some points off of that. Like just changing maybe an action you run all the time and, you know, flipping the screen or whatever that looks like, you know, it, as simple as, I know one thing we did this year later in conference was we went from a screen that set to the middle to the baseline, right? And all of a sudden, you know, we stole 6 points off it because a baseline screen's much different to guard than a screen towards the middle. And that won't win you a national championship, but it'll steal you a few points. So I absolutely think you can add a few wrinkles, but I also think that if you overdo it, the last thing I want is in a big game is my team not playing with automatic habits and overthinking, which is what they've done all year. So I think you have to be careful.
Yeah, for sure. I think one, I'm really, really big on the blob wars. I think that's a great place where, especially the second time around, you've seen someone. I mean, in conference, everybody's prepared for everything you do. So when you see how someone wants to guard something, you're going to know how they want to guard it. And when they see it again, you can probably bet if it's post to post something and they switch it, you know, second time around, you can probably get creative and find ways to get a couple easy ones. And that's something we do for conference time is you might have one, whether it's a new blob, a counter out of what we do. And that's one of those things. It's an easy, quick hit piece that's not, you know, crazy different conceptually or out of a, you know, flow. And, you know, I think those are, you know, there's some great times and places, like you said. I, you know, we don't have to outsmart and try to trick everybody, but, you know, if 2 to 4 points, you know, we can steal easily, you know, then I think, you know, that's obviously a big part of the job.
So, yeah, and we love baseline out of bounds stuff too, so I love that you say that. We always try to win that margin.
Yeah, I just, maybe like 3.2 points was per game differential, but I mean, in the course of blobs, I mean, that's a big deal, and especially in the big, tight game. So it's just a great place to go get them.
For sure.
You guys press a lot. You guys were, you pressed more than 92% of the teams in the country. We did the same. We were up in the 98th percentile of time pressing. It's just not something that I think so many people are scared to do it at all in college. Everybody just is, you know, the ball handlers are all too good. And, you know, and so I think especially at the highest level, people are really, really scared to press. So how much does the opponent impact how much you want to press and the tweaks in the game plan and things like that? And how do you account for those teams that you think, man, this team might really, will the juice be worth the squeeze tonight? How much of all that goes into how much you're deciding to do when it comes to game plan and pressing?
Yeah. I mean, absolutely. All of that is considered. I mean, we believe in a lot in alignment basketball. So if you're going to play with pace and put a lot of pressure on the defense early in your offense, well, I don't think anybody wants to then play 28 seconds of defense too, right? And I learned that. My husband was a high school varsity boys coach, and they played fast, and there's no shot clock. So the game can become really unbalanced without alignment. So part of it is we believe in alignment. I mean, we believe in being disruptive on both sides of the ball, right? Having the same mentality throughout the whole game. And then we absolutely take into consideration personnel with which press we use and how much do we use it and how often do we use it. Like, for example, when we played Iowa last year, we didn't press because Caitlin Clark can slice up a press better than anybody in the country, right? So it didn't make sense for us to be more extended against her when, as good of a scorer she is, she's as good, if not a better passer. So, yeah, the total consideration, how many ball handlers do they actually have? But it's just some of it's who we are and how we play and how we train. And we want our kids to be cranked up on both sides of the ball. And, you know, there's a tell them in basketball, effort and competitiveness is an advantage. Right, like I love to share, like I love to golf for fun, and like I can't try harder and play better, but in basketball you can. So we try to just use those as advantages.
Yeah, the thing I do like about golf though is the worse you are, the more you get to play. There's not many things that, you know, you get more playing time the worse you are at it. So
more swings.
Right, I feel pretty good about my PT in golf, but I'm not anybody's first call for a scramble, unfortunately. All right, Coach, we're going to move on to our quick hitter segment. We'll hit on a couple topics here that, you know, just off the wall things that we can kind of come across in day-to-day, things that are fun or unique. And, you know, getting to know you a little bit last season and in a lot of different settings, it was clear that family was really important to you, like your family. How do you balance being a mom, a wife, a Division I head basketball coach, you know, a person of faith? You know, how do you juggle all those things and be really great at them?
Well, one of my favorite things is I talk way less about work-life balance and way more about work-life integration. I'm really fortunate at Michigan State where it's really family-friendly. I think we had practice on Wednesday and we were doing a lot of shooting and my kids were there, actually some of my kids' friends, they were helping to rebound, right? So they were part of the practice. And I just think it's like, as I shared, it's not just basketball, it's life. And sometimes it's like, we just take ourselves way too seriously. And I think what I found is my team, there's a relaxing piece when the kids are around, you know, and I want my kids to be part of it. They're part of me. They're part of the program. I was fortunate. My husband played college basketball. He's been a high school and college coach, so he totally gets it. But I just think it's like so often everybody tries to separate it. And if you try to separate it, then it's really hard. It's frustrating. You always feel like you're giving up something to give to the other. And we just put it together. And I feel very unapologetic about that. You know, if there's days where my daughter's distracting at the gym, it's like, well, there's distractions during games too. So it's just another thing that, you know, thing we can work on. But the integration piece is really important. And I think we're always reminded that we are more than our jobs. We are more than our wins. We are more than our losses. And the faith piece of if that's how you live, you'll never make it in this profession. It will eat you alive. So I think you have to constantly work at making sure you're really valuing things that last and that aren't conditional.
That's incredible stuff. I hope every athletic director and every head coach are listening to that, because, you know, I've heard work-life balance 3 million times, have not heard work-life integration. And I mean, what a powerful piece. And like you said, I mean, in a profession where, you know, people can get lost. They lose themselves inside this and everything so easily. I mean, what a powerful message to young women too. And that's why I think so cool and a lost piece of what you're doing, what our head coach does. We've got little kids running around left and right, and, you know, and our girls love it. And one thing I think our players get to see is that, you know, you can be a really good blank, whatever your job is, and be a great mom. You could be a great coach, a great mom. You know, you can be a great dad and a great husband and a great bat. And they can see that. And that's important, you know, for our players that may not have some of those relationships to see that. What's that look like? What does that look like for, you know, to have someone just there and present and things like that? I think that's, you know, it's not just great for us. I mean, yeah, it is great for us, but I think it's great for our team too.
It is. We all just relax a little.
Yeah. We need a little more of that. That's pretty cool. No, that is awesome. All right. Quick hitter number two. Speaking to recruits in general, what's one or two just like hard truths or big pieces of wisdom to help them guide through the process? I think there's so many people in their lives that tell them what they want to hear or just don't really know what to tell them. What are some of those things that can help? Just some big hard truths or some great wisdoms you have in regards to that.
Well, there's two things that we share with recruits that you have to pay attention to because they're different no matter where you go. Like at our level, everybody has nice resources. Everybody gets a lot of things, right? Like it's amazing between gear and travel and exposure and high level basketball. That's consistent at this level. There's a lot of nice schools. But two things are different you have to pay attention to. One, people. So who you're coached by and who you play with is going to be really, really different depending on your choice. So you've got to make a decision around who do you want to be coached by and who do you want to play with. And then the second thing is style of play. I've seen plenty of really good players in the wrong system, and I've seen plenty of pretty good players in the right system where it's like, wow, that kid is way better than I thought they would be because they picked the right school. Right, or I've seen a player who might be unbelievable in an up-tempo system playing in a slow half court, and they don't play, right? Because that's suddenly it's that what they're good at isn't a fit for the style of play. So those are the two things that I think you have to pay really good attention to, and I think the people that are helping have to pay more attention to that. Because from my experience, those are the pieces that really matter in how experience goes.
Yeah, no, that's awesome. I try to tell, you know, everybody that, you know, that asks, you know, I mean, your commitment tweet's going to generate X amount of likes and that feeling's going to last for, you know, X amount of time. And then the season's going to start and then you're going to be doing the thing that you've loved, you've given your entire life to. And then the people you're around and the people you're coached by that's where your joy is going to be found from a basketball standpoint. Mm-hmm. And I just think you would think that would just hit you in the head, but you know, it doesn't. It's easy to get caught in it's all the other things, mm-hmm. you know, but the meat and potatoes is what you're talking about because that's what's going to make your experience.
Definitely.
All right. Last quick hitter here. How much do you guys work on special situations and are there one or two of the most like key situations you want your team to be perfect at when that time calls for them?
Well, some of those happen organically with the way we practice because we'll do certain games like a 4-minute game or we do a game called 76 where it's the score starts 76-76 and when the first team gets to 80, it goes to 2 minutes on the clock. So that creates in itself a lot of organic 1-2 possession late game situations. But we work on sideline needing to score, right? Like low time sideline needing to score, medium time, whether that's a 2 or 3, because that is a very real part of our game. And then the same guarding that. So I think those are outside of like what happens organically in practice, those are things that we will just create to make sure that we're all on the same page with how we're going to guard, you know, up one with this amount of time left, up two, up three, and the same with needing to score.
Yeah, I love it. We do the same drill. I think you guys, you know, if you're going to go score 90 a game this year, you may need to make it like 84-84, though.
We might.
You'll send a powerful message when you up it about 6 points this year about where you guys are headed.
Yeah, the girls would be confused. What drill is this?
All right, Coach, we're going to throw the full court press on you, all right? So this should be right up your alley. See how you like it for a change. Super short questions. You've got just 10 seconds or less to get it across, all right?
Okay.
All right. What is the worst piece of advice anyone's ever given you?
I think this is more of just a advice that I hear in our world is YOLO. I think it's like, I don't believe in reckless decision making. I just think life's really sacred.
But that is a good one. And there's unfortunately probably a lot of yellow tattoos out there. And that's some good counterculture in a good way. All right. What coach out there do you think just does an incredible job of sharing, growing the game, and somebody that you definitely think people should tune into and learn from?
Well, I've been really fortunate. Ryan Pinone on the men's side, Alabama men's associate head coach, has become a good friend, and he is a wizard and an incredible sharer.
Okay, that's a good one. I'll make sure he'll get a shout out then. As you've grown as a coach, what have you purposely gotten more and more away from?
Stopping in practice. I let him play a lot more.
It's hard. I imagine that's a growth area and a prayer area.
Yep.
Well, Coach, seriously, have loved having you on, getting to talk a little basketball, talk a little life. You are by far one of the just the best human beings, and the fact that you're a winner, that's pretty cool too. So thanks for sharing.
Thanks, Wyatt. That's really kind. Thanks so much for having me. Good luck to you guys. You guys are crushing it.
Yeah, I hope so. Appreciate you. All right, at the buzzer with our final thoughts. We're all about growing the game. Hope you learned a little bit, found some things that you can go and take back to your program, and things that fit and work for you. We would love to hear from you going forward. If there's topics and things that you'd love to hear us discuss or hit on, we'd gladly jump into some of those things. Any guests that you're super excited about that you'd love to see on the show, we'd love to reach out and try to get them on. Make sure and follow Pick and Pop on Twitter. Coach Zach Boisvert at St. Louis is an unbelievable basketball mind. He's so gracious with his knowledge and his time, shares the game through a ton of different YouTube videos, links, thoughts, breakdowns, and it really is worth your time. He's just an absolute basketball encyclopedia. He's extremely well-versed. That's it for the show today. We'll see you back here tomorrow for the second day of our double drop. Until then, keep adding to your playbook.